It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, all about beer and the brewing industry. Let's look at one side of it. The traditional big American brewers are in the midst of what one report called an identity crisis. Domestic sales of light beer falling again last year. The biggest beer brands in the U.S., Budweiser, Miller, and Coors, are now owned respectively by companies in Belgium, England, and Canada. The nation's two most popular American-owned beer brands, that would be Corona and Modelo, both are brewed in Mexico. And according to reports in recent weeks, the iconic American Pabst Blue Ribbon brand will soon be owned by a Russian company. Now, on the other side, another story out of the brewing business. Against this backdrop, craft beers and microbreweries are on the rise. Craft beer production was up almost 10% in 2013. And now there are more than 2,700 craft breweries operated in the U.S. That's the highest total since the 1880s. Every year, hundreds more are opening. In 2012, and that's the most recent year for figures, the industry provided an estimated 108,000 jobs in the country. That's according to the American the Brewers Association. We want to talk about craft brewing this hour, the part of the beer business that is growing by leaps and bounds. Here to help us do that, Sean Lewis, the author of a new book, We Make Beer. We Make Beer, the inside the spirit and the artistry of America's craft brewers. Sean joins us by phone. Hello, Sean.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on the show. You're a beer columnist and a sports writer for Santa Barbara News Press there in California. You started this book with a different idea, sort of an intimate story of you and your brother driving across the country, drinking beer, and it turned into the story of brewers making beer. What's the story you found the most that fascinated you, that you latched on into for this book?
I think one of the things that caught on with me the most was how much a lot of these people had in common. And one of the things that stuck with me was out in Nebraska with Nebraska Brewing Company. For some reason, when they opened, they just met a lot of opposition and a lot of criticism. And they responded to that opposition and that criticism by being even more assertive and more aggressive. And they're a brewery that's really kind of thrived and is an example of these small brewers making big steps.
Mm-hmm. What type of opposition did they initially run up against?
It was everything from the name of their brewery. When they were decided they were going to be Nebraska Brewing Company, everybody told them that wouldn't work because nobody in Iowa would buy the beer. All the way to when they started making hoppy beers in Iowa, in Nebraska, everybody said, nobody wants to drink an IPA in Nebraska. And they've steadily proved people wrong. They've also expanded into other markets, and people have said, why are we getting this beer from Nebraska? But as soon as people start trying and drinking their beer, they start winning over more and more fans.
If you'd like to join our conversation, perhaps you as a listener work in the craft brew business. We just outlined some 110,000 jobs in the country now in the craft brewing business. Perhaps one of our listeners, more of our listeners, are in that business. 1-866-780-9100. There are something 30-odd breweries, I think, in Iowa. Or are you a home brewer? What brews have been your most delicious? Or perhaps you want to share one that's been atrocious. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Iowa Public Radio is also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Sean Lewis, also a theme in this book, you have found out and make it clear in your writing that this is not just about craft beer. It's about communities. It's about working together. What are the other themes you found out that are not necessarily just about beer?
Right. Well, I think one of the things, one of the bigger takeaways from this book is how the beer industry is able to collaborate instead of to compete against one another. It's not to say that there's no competition and that, there's just plenty of room for everybody in the marketplace. But at the same time, I think a lot of these smaller brewers recognize that they don't have to be cutthroat against each other, that if they can work together and embrace the same customers and embrace the same kind of motto that a rising tide lifts all boats, that a lot of good things are going to happen for them.
Mm-hmm. And it's also part of the local food movement. How is it tied in there?
Well, even though a lot of beer is not made with local ingredients, unless you live in a region that grows barley and hops, it is produced in a local way. And so because a lot of these craft breweries are relatively small, they only provide their beer to the local community. So it gives a local spot a local community a spot to go and have a beer and relax and you know, either discuss local events or you know, eat local food. It's become sort of the new pub, what a pub used to be in the older days.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the origins of our nation's renewed craft brewing. You put it at the doorstep of Boston Beer Company. How did the founders of that company recognize that the time was ripe for craft beer?
Right. Well, they're certainly one of the founders there. I would throw Sierra Nevada and Anchor Brewing out there as well. At least in terms of ones that are still around, but they recognized it was right because it was right. I mean, there was a thirst for a quality beer at the time. It's not that the beer being made by the industry giants was terrible. It was just that it was all the same and that people were ready for something a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. I've had other previous conversations about beer and say how prohibition affected beer brewing in this country. It was a huge setback for craft brewing. But then we had, you know, prohibition ending in the 20th century. And then we had decades of pretty much the same type of beer being put out by three big breweries. How come this didn't happen earlier, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that the American people liked the beer that was being put out. I mean, if you look at it today, there's still over 90% of beer is consumed in the United States is not craft beer. Americans like the taste of the beer being produced by the big three, by Bud, Budweiser, Miller, and Coors. It's also that Prohibition did a lot more than just wipe out businesses. It wiped out entire infrastructures for those businesses, and at the same time technology advanced while people weren't brewing. So the only people who were able to survive Prohibition were the ones who were able to grow their equipment wise and infrastructure wise while they weren't making beer. So it was a tough time in many ways.
Sean Lewis, author of We Make Beer, with us this hour. He's a beer columnist. This is his first book, We Make Beer. We're also joined by Jay Jubeck. Jay Jubeck is the owner and president of Jubeck New World Brewing Company in Dubuque. It's a small, I guess you would call it a nano brewery, located in downtown Dubuque, Iowa. Jay, welcome to our program.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ben.
So how long have you been around?
We just opened in July, actually, so we've only been open for a couple months here.
And how's business?
It's been very, very well so far.
Tell us a little. Your launch is a little different. You had was it a Kickstarter campaign?
Yeah, we did a Kickstarter fund, raised $37,000 through the Kickstarter website.
Mm-hmm. What does your brewery, your pub, look like there?
It's just a small tasting room. We have 1,000 square feet. Our brewing operation is visible from the tasting room. And then we do all of our fermentation and cold storage down in the basement. So,
mm-hmm.
Simple little storefront.
How much do you produce?
We're doing 50-gallon batches, which is just a little bit over a barrel and a half, three times a week. So we're cranking out about 150 gallons of beer every week.
Mm-hmm. And people coming after work during the day? Well, how do you fit into the social life of the downtown area?
Yeah, we right now we're just open on Thursdays and Friday nights. From 4 to 11, so we definitely get the after-work crowd. We're trying to create a space that is, a friendly neighborhood kind of pub feel. But we also do get, a little bit of a later in the evening crowd as well, and we're open until 11, so we get some after-dinner, beer drinkers in there too.
Mm-hmm. Tell us, what brews do you offer?
We do a variety of beers, and one of the things that's kind of unique about us is we're constantly rotating our lineup, doing different beers all the time. We have a couple kind of standard, American styles, pale ales, IPAs, imperial stout. But we do a lot of different things, too, like a saison. I just put on a ginger saison last week, an English-style pub ale, and we have a pumpkin ale coming out this week. So we try to keep it fresh and that's one of the things that our members really, really like, I think, is they can get something new every week.
You were started by a Kickstarter campaign, but also something very different about your brewery is that people are members, similar to a CSA. You have a CSB, Community Supported Brewer. How does that work?
Yeah, so we use the Kickstarter platform to essentially sell these memberships to people who were beer enthusiasts in the Dubuque community mainly. And they'd have to come in every week or every other week, depending on their level of contribution, and get the beer that we're making. So we use that platform to get the word out mainly, but also to get a customer base that was committed to coming in every week for 1 year to get the beer that they've basically purchased.
Right. Do the members have anything, have any input past the purchase? Do they get to weigh in and say, I imagine they do, I like this one better than the other one, so please make more of that one.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, every week we're getting feedback from folks and, you know, what they like, what they didn't like, and, you know, definitely using that information to tweak our recipes and try new styles and that kind of thing. So.
Mm-hmm. We want to reach out to our listeners. Do you work in the craft brew business? Tell us about it. Are you a home brewer? What brews have been your most delicious? What problems have you run into? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. We're also on Facebook. Back to you, Sean Lewis. So this, give us a little bit of the differentiation in the craft brewing market. You've been talking about Boston Beer Company, Sierra Nevada, Stone Brewing, but Jay Jubeck, he's at the smallest end of the spectrum with a nano brewery, right?
Yeah, and that's I think there's a lot of exciting stuff happening in the nano brewery. And Jay, good luck to you guys out there. I know it can be tough when you're brewing so small because the margins get smaller, but that's part of what makes this this community so exciting is there's a real opportunity for brewers to sort of experiment and make beer for the love of making beer. You can get a lot of really good product out that way, and it's a lot of fun for the customer, I think, to go to a nano brewery and be able to try such a diverse range. I know you mentioned some of the diverse beers you're brewing out there.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Sean.
Jay, do you hope to become more than a nano brewery? Is this the first stage?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you have to look at it in terms of some growth, but our goal is not to be a large production brewery by any means. We'd like to be able to grow into our role as a local nano brewery or maybe a little bit bigger than nano, but keeping it focused on the Dubuque community and providing, the local pub, the local beer. So
how is it in terms of being able to make a living at this, at that smallest stage of brewing?
It's tough. I mean, I initially started the brewery, and I do have a business partner, but maintaining my day job, working full time at the University of Dubuque, and just recently I was kind of in a position where I had to cut down to part time there so I could, have enough time to make beer during the week and be just open two nights a week. But even those two nights just takes a lot of time to do all the brewing and kegging and cleaning and everything that goes into it. So.
And Jay, you started out as a home brewer?
Yeah.
And you've had the passion ever since?
Yeah, definitely. I've been home brewing for 6-7 years, and right away I thought it'd be really cool to have a brewery, and I was just really surprised that nobody did it in Dubuque. We've been without a brewery since really since the late 90s. And
was that Star Brewing?
Yeah, Dubuque Star Brewing was the last real brewery to speak of in the Dubuque area. But with a community that's got such a rich brewing heritage, we just had to do something. So
yeah, okay. So it was a matter of was there a time when you were waiting for someone else to do it? Someone has to do it, and nobody stepped into it.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of cool things happening in Dubuque. There's a big revitalization of the historic Millwork District, and I know they're hoping that they'll get a brewery down in that area, and I hope they do. I think the more craft breweries in the area, the better business that we all can do. But I was just really surprised with all the progress and city improvements that we haven't had a brewery yet, and so we definitely saw an opportunity to start something.
Jay Jubeck is the owner and president of a brand new brewery in Dubuque, Jubeck New World Brewing Company. And Sean Lewis, author of We Make Beer. I mentioned nearly 3,000 craft breweries operating in the U.S. I think I saw a statistic about, on average, 1.5 open every day in the United States. Something like that, I think. Sean, tell me, how many breweries did you visit to get their stories for this book?
There was over 20 that I visited, and then there was probably another dozen or so that I contacted and spoke with, maybe on the phone or digitally. So, I mean, there was a lot, and I basically got to the point where I decided I was going to just have to limit myself to the breweries that I had sort of selected for one reason or another, or that kind of found me, and leave it there, because otherwise I could probably have written about 3,000 pages on all the breweries, because there's a lot of great places out there with a lot of great stories.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting in your book, too. You talk about how this is craft brewing, which kind of ties us into, well, making things with your hands, but it's a combination of really precise automation in a lot of cases, technology, mm-hmm. and that artistry of crafting a beer. Talk about how those two go together. People may not realize when they open their bottle of craft beer exactly how it's made.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still a really romantic idea out there that craft beer is all made by one guy kind of, you know, peering over a kettle, stirring things and that sort of thing, that it's all made by hand. When the reality is, especially when you get to the bigger guys, I don't know what the situation's like there with Jay Drubeck, but when you get to the bigger guys, there's a lot of automation. There's basically brewers. They're not peering over the kettle or over the mash. They're peering over a computer screen and checking numbers and readouts and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of the romance that I think people associate with craft beer is mostly just marketing and in people's heads. But at the same time, that's what's allowing these brewers to make really good beer, is the technology that we have.
Mm-hmm. If you would not have it as automated or regulated by technology, you would have what? Inconsistency in beer?
Yeah, that's probably the biggest thing. It's not to say that the beer wouldn't be good. It's just that, say, your Sierra Nevada Pale Ale wouldn't necessarily taste the same in every bottle. Whereas now, I mean, chances are great that if you open a bottle of Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, it's going to taste like any other bottle of Sierra Nevada Pale Ale that you open this year.
Jay Drubeck, how are you doing with being consistent in your brews, or is that not top of the list?
Well, you know, I have to laugh a little bit listening to Sean there, because we are doing exactly the opposite of that large-scale production, where, you know, we are kind of peering into the kettles and, you know, scrubbing out the fermenters by hand and that sort of thing. And, it does, you know, pose some challenges in you know, producing consistently good beer. We're pretty fortunate that we have a, you know, very supportive local community, our members that are, you know, a little bit forgiving in terms of some inconsistencies with our product. But I think that's kind of the beauty of being small, is you can get away with, you know, the snowflake beer, as they call it, you know, where every batch is just a little bit different.
Right, right. And I know, having brewed as much as you have and any other brewer I've talked to, you get a really lousy batch once in a while where it all has to go down the drain, don't you, Jay?
Yeah, you know, it's going to happen. We've had one of those. So, you know, it's no fun, but kind of goes with the territory, and you learn something every time that happens. So.
What have been your other biggest challenges in the first few weeks of existence as the Drubeck New World Brewing Company in Dubuque?
I think our biggest issue from the get-go has just been keeping up with our demand on sales. And we knew that we would sell a lot of beer, but only open two nights a week. We kind of thought it'd be pretty manageable, but right away we had to increase our fermentation capacity. We doubled our tanks and started brewing, you know, quite a bit more frequently. So, mm-hmm. you know, and that's taken a little bit of time. Each time we brew a batch of beer, it's 3 to 4 weeks before we're serving it up usually. So,
more demand than you can handle. That's
yeah.
That's a good problem to have. Let's talk with Matt in West Okoboji. He dialed 1-866-780-9100, talking about craft brewing as a big trend in the beer business. Hi, Matt.
Can you hear me?
Yes, now I can hear you, Matt. Okay.
Good.
Thanks. We've got a couple minutes before the break. How are you involved here?
My wife and I own Westo Beer in West Okoboji. We're about 18 months into the project. We opened a year ago, Memorial Day weekend. And I guess I called in because I was listening to this kind of the conversation about scale of breweries and the nano brewery, and we're in comparison, we're larger than a nano. We're a 15 barrel or 450 gallon batch brewery. So I guess I thought it'd be kind of fun to call in and just talk about.
Yeah. You know, you were right between the big guys and the little guys. How did you get the money to start up and invest in those larger fermenters?
We're half bank and half private investors.
Mm-hmm. And what types of beer? So, what types of craft beer?
We have the tasting room. We usually have seven or eight beers on tap. We distribute four different beers in the bottle. Actually, three now. Our fourth one is coming up here really soon. A German style Pilsner, smoked red ale, an India pale lager, and soon a cocoa stout.
Mm-hmm. And what have been your biggest challenges?
I think distribution and marketing, I guess, kind of side by side. During the planning process, we decided to go a little bit more towards the distribution side, being a packaging brewery. Even though we get pretty good revenues through our tasting room at the brewery, we're looking for, you know, larger volumes through distribution. And so, you know, we've kind of learned that you can have a good solid product and good packaging, but you've got to have that marketing and distribution. So that's where we spend a lot of our time.
Yeah, we want to talk about that also in our second half hour. How many people are employed, Matt, at your brewery at West O Beer?
We have four full-time and anywhere from six to eight part-time.
Okay, what about you, Jay Ju, back up there in Dubuque? How many people employed?
Right now, it's just myself and my business partner, Dan. So
okay, very good. Matt at West Okoboji, thanks for getting in touch, and good luck to West O Beer.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
For employees there of the estimated nearly 110,000 jobs in this country that are due to craft breweries, the boom in craft brewing, what we're talking about this year. Do you work in the craft brew business? What's your business model? What have been your biggest challenges? Perhaps you're a home brewer. What brews have been your most delicious or simply atrocious? 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us. Back with Sean Lewis, author of We Make Beer, Jay Jubeck of Jubeck New World Brewing Company in Dubuque. And we'll also have some brewers from Des Moines, from the Black Hollow Brewing Company in just a moment. Back with more of River to River in just a moment. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We're talking this hour about the boom in craft beers and microbreweries. We have some 2,700 craft breweries operating in the U.S. now. That's the highest total since the 1880s. Every year, hundreds more are opening, and some 110,000 jobs are those of people working in the craft brew industry. Perhaps that's you. Do you work in the craft brew industry? What are your biggest challenges? What's your business model? 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Our email, you can tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can find us on Facebook. A tweet from Run Drink Iowa, Goldeb Nugget IPA, hoppiness is happiness. And people on our Twitter want to talk about hops, which we will in just a moment. We have Sean Lewis with us. He's the author of We Make Beer, Inside the Spirit and Artistry of America's Craft Brewers. Also, Jay Jubeck, owner and president of Jubeck New World Brewing Company in Dubuque. It's a nano brewery located in downtown Dubuque. It's been open just since July. Let's also talk to another brewer here in Iowa in the Des Moines area. Darren Vandenberg is with us, and as well as Kevin Hall. They are founders of Black Hollow Brewing Company in Des Moines. Hello, Darren. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Ben. Thanks so much for having us.
You're in our Des Moines studio. Now, you're not up and running yet. Tell us what stage you're at.
Well, a week ago, actually today, we launched our Indiegogo crowdfunding campaign. So we're kind of approaching this thing in a similar manner to the way that Jay did with the crowdfunding. So that's underway right now. The ultimate goal, I think, with that is to ideally use the money there to get a space secured and then begin fermentation and things like that.
What's your goal? What do you need to start up?
The goal in the Indiegogo is 50,000.
Mm-hmm. Are you doing all right so far?
We are, yeah. Pretty good traction so far. You know, we'd always like to see a little bit more, I think, but so far, so good.
Okay. Wild fermentation is something you're specializing in, and it's interesting that usually brewers, we talked a little bit about the technology in our last half hour, want to keep wild things, things floating around in the air, for out of the brews. They don't want them contaminating and competing with the yeast that they put in there. But you are doing something else. What is wild fermentation?
This is Kevin. And yeah, so wild fermentation is basically taking the natural yeast and bacteria that are just available everywhere in the world, especially on fruit, you know, things like that, and using those to ferment your beer. You get a lot of different aromatics and flavor profiles than you would with traditional brewer's yeast. So that's something that we're trying to embrace, as opposed to go in the other direction that most breweries do, where they do try to keep those out.
Mm-hmm. So you have a piece of fruit, a berry or something, and you can just lay it out. I suppose you'd have to keep the fruit flies away from it, but and it will become inhabited by yeast?
I mean, there's yeast pretty much everywhere. It's just trying to find the correct ones, I guess. So actually, our slurry that we're using for fermentation of our beers was harvested and cultured from some blackberries that we got in Iowa. So Iowa blackberries that we're going to be using, that really kind of sets our beer apart from everyone else.
So you've been out there wild fermenting, and then you pick out a strain that you like.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But you haven't brewed with this yet.
I have at home. We like we said, we aren't actually brewing commercially yet, but we've done plenty of test batches with it, and it's turning out fantastic.
Okay. Also, another term that you use in your brewing, farmhouse brewing. What is meant by that?
So farmhouse brewing is kind of a throwback to the, you know, older days in Europe, especially, where they brewed more for subsistence, for the farm workers, for the people who lived on the farm. So there are lower alcohol beers that, you know, were brewed and stored, and then they drink them in the farm and, you know, during the work hours, you know, whatever, just to give them, you know, hydration, some nourishment, things like that. So they're lower alcohol, because you don't really want people, you know, getting drunk while they're out there you know, picking your fruits and vegetables and things like that. But the styles have kind of evolved both in Europe and the U.S., and they're much higher alcohol now, but still not monstrous. So.
How do these type of brews, this combination of wild fermentation and farmhouse brewing that you're focusing on, how does that make the beer taste different? We have plenty of craft brew drinkers out there. What would they think was different when they tasted your beer?
There's going to be a lot of kind of funky, fruity flavors. I mean, some of the terms that are used to describe the characteristics of these wild yeast, you know, might be a little off-putting, like goaty or horse blanket or barnyardy, but it's all used in a good way. Once you've had these and you taste those flavors, it's actually it mixes very well with the beer, and you kind of understand exactly what it is. It tastes a lot better than it sounds when you describe it that way. They're mostly not very hop forward beers, so, you know, if you love IPAs, this is going to be a bit of a different beer for you. But there are some very amazing intense flavors and fruity flavors that you can get from hops also, that you know, that people might enjoy too with wild fermented beers.
Let's talk a little bit about hops. We haven't done that at this point because Sean Lewis, let me go back to you, author of We Make Beer. Hops have really taken off. I remember tasting my first Sierra Nevada Pale Ale many years ago, but thinking it was the hoppiest thing in the world. And now I pick up a Pale Ale and I think, wow, I want more hops. What's going on? Our tastes have changed?
Yeah, I think the biggest reason why hops are such a big, you know, thing in craft beer right now is because they kind of represent the opposite of what the big beers were, or what they were lacking. So when you get a Bud Light or something, you get the sort of semi-sweet malt character of it that comes through, especially as it warms up a little bit. But what you don't get a lot of is hop flavor or hop aroma. And so when craft brewers started throwing in pounds and pounds and pounds of hops into their beer, that flavor was what stood out the most from everything else. So it kind of became, the hoppier a beer was, the better the beer was, whether or not that was necessarily true. That was kind of what perception was. And so, yeah, hops have become exceedingly popular, and I think it's because they represent the sort of opposite of what beer had come to be under the days when it was all kind of the same corporate lagers.
Mm-hmm. We've been on this hop ride for many years now. Do you think it's something that will fade eventually? To we measure hops and their bitterness in IBUs, international bitterness units, and it seems like there's a competition to get your palate really bittered up there. Do you think it's a passing thing, or will we always just love, or some of us always love, this incredible bitterness?
I think, I mean, there was definitely a sort of hops IBU arms race going on the same way there's been. Yeah, the same way there was an ABV or alcohol by volume arms race there for a while to make the world's strongest beer. And that those sort of things will never go away because it gets headlines. But at the same time, I don't think the bitterness in beer is ever going to go away. Hops provide a great balance to the sweet malts that are used. And, you know, IPA is an old style. It's been around for hundreds and hundreds of years, and people have been brewing with hops for longer than that. So no, I don't think it's necessarily a trend. You might see focus on other things like wild ales coming up and taking a little bit more of the spotlight. But I don't think hoppy beers and IPAs and things like that are ever gonna fade away.
Darren and Kevin, you're in our Des Moines studio. You're concentrating on some other flavors. What's going on in your beers that is not necessarily hops?
So. Our beers, the wild yeasts are going to tend to dry the beers out, so you don't necessarily need those the bitterness that the hops provide to balance out the sweetness, because the beers just kind of dry out and they're not quite as sweet. So ours really focus on, one, the grains that are actually in the beer, and then two, just the different flavors that those yeast and bacteria are going to produce. So like I said earlier, you know, some of those kind of funky, barnyardy type flavors that are really unique and complex, you're going to get different layering of flavors in those beers, and some fruitiness too. You can get, you know, those type of things that you can, you know, in hops. Also, but different types of fruits, I guess reminiscent fruit flavors. And then also with some of the bacteria, you're going to get some souring. So you'll get lactic flavors, more acid, not intensely sour. The idea here is to blend and balance all of these together so that you get a really nice complex beer in the end.
Mm-hmm. Do you sense that we still have a ways to go, our guest in Des Moines, in terms of sort of having our palates develop here in the U.S. and not just bombing them with bitter hops?
I would say that, you know, flavors are always going to evolve. You know, a section of the craft beer market obviously has a very developed flavor profile, and I think that it's always going to change. But I think that on a whole, I think more people are appreciating better tasting foods, cheeses, wines, beers, things like that. So it's just kind of a turning away from, you know, things that have less flavor to more flavor. And, you know, that's kind of what we're trying to do also.
Right. And Sean Lewis, they just compared it with wine and cheese there. Part of this revolution is that we're willing to pay, you know, $6, $8, $10, $12 for a large bottle of beer. How has our thinking changed?
I mean, I would even go so far as I know a lot of people are paying $20 to $30 for a bottle of beer. And I think you go back 10, 12 years ago and people would, you know, their jaws would hit the floor if you told them you're going to pay $12 to $20 for a bottle of beer. I think it's just as people have come into it, they would rather spend $20 on a great bottle of beer than $20 on 30, you know, not so great beers. It's just a matter of enjoying what you have and appreciating what you have a little bit more than just having something just to drink it.
Here's an email from John. John writes, do you know of any attempts to grow hops in Iowa? Do you know if it's possible or might be possible to grow good quality hops here? Jay, do you know anything about that up in Dubuque?
I guess somebody coming into the bar pretty much every week who's growing hops, you know, in their backyard or, you know, their few acres they have at their property. And they're always asking me about, can we use their hops? And, you know, I generally just say, well, bring them in and we'll try them, you know, for use in dry hopping. Or we do a post-fermentation or actually post-packaging infusion of hops with a hop rocket that infuses the beers with a little bit of extra hoppiness before it, you know, gets to the tap.
Well, what is a hop rocket? I've heard. Yeah. Is that the same thing as a hop cannon?
Probably. Sam Caligioni and Dogfish Head Brewery, I think, were the ones to pioneer the. They call it a Randall, and it's basically just a canister for, you know, storing some whole leaf hops, and then the beer is pumped out of a keg or serving tank through the Randall or the hop rocket, and then up to your tap. And it's definitely, you know, adds a freshness of hop aromas and flavors. And, you know, it's just something really exciting and interesting for folks at the tap room that they can enjoy, kind of unique.
Darren and Kevin, do you grow your own hops, or do you get them locally? Or will you? I guess you're still in the startup phase.
Well, I think ideally we'd like to get as many local products as possible. We aren't currently growing any hops. I know off the top of my head, Kevin, maybe you can help me out a little bit here, of two producers in Iowa. Iowa Hops and then Arrowhead Hops are both kind of in the earlier stages of hop production. But, you know, our goal is to, you know, use as many local ingredients as we can.
We're certainly in a latitude that can sustain and a climate that can sustain hops. I know, for just anecdotally from a number of people, it's a pretty hardy plant, I believe.
It is, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And can see Sean Lewis, anything from you about growing hops? Did you encounter some hop gardens?
I mean, I've encountered hop gardens. A lot of breweries these days are growing them. Hops can be grown just about anywhere. The question is the terroir kind of right for it? A lot of them prefer to grow. I think it's just about at the 45th parallel. So you're looking at a lot of regions like up in Germany, sort of that level of the globe there. But, you know, and they grow really well in the Pacific Northwest as well. But that being said, I don't see any reason why you couldn't grow hops in Iowa. There's a... you know, there's good farmland up there, and if it's good for other crops, it's going to be good for hops as well.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the connection between farmers and brewers. Is it Darren and Kevin, are you working there with farmers there in other ways?
We currently are not. We do want to build relationships like that. I mean, we're in the Midwest. We can grow these things, and we'd prefer to grow, like Darren said, as much, you know, local stuff as we can. It was what we want to use. So we do, you know, envision setting up, you know, arrangements with local farmers for whatever it might be, you know, wheat or barley, mm-hmm. Hops, you know, anything that we put fruit that we put in our beer.
Yeah. Sean, what have you seen in your travels to 20 some breweries that might help out Darren and Kevin and Jay, give them some ideas?
Well, one thing that I saw a lot of down in Alabama was they have a really good connection there. Good People Brewing Company has a great connection with the local farmers. And what they'll do is they take their spent grains and they'll donate them to farmers, and farmers will use it for either feed or fertilizer. There's a company down there that takes the spent grain and adds it to a compost and creates really rich soil that they then sell to local organic farms. So it kind of creates a whole ecosystem down there coming just from the beer. And I know they're not unique in doing that. And I know a lot of, you know, a cow farmer or a pig farmer can be a brewer's best friend in terms of getting rid of the spent grain that can really add up.
Sean Lewis, we haven't talked that much about marketing. You make the point in your book that it's not just about the beer. You can have a really awesome beer consistently brewed, but marketing will make it into a bigger hit than it would otherwise be. What have you found out about the key to that?
The key to that, I think, is partly getting lucky. I think it's there's no, if you know, if I knew a key to marketing success, I don't know if I would still be a struggling writer. I think I would go into the marketing biz. But I look at a beer like Firestone Walker's 805, which is huge out here in California, especially in the 805 area code, which it is named after. And it was never intended to be that, and it was never intended to be such a masterful or I should say successful product. It was kind of hoped that it would be just another sort of local product, but it took off. And part of the reason was the local community really took a lot of pride in being local and having a local beer producer. And that's just an example of kind of the luck aspect of it. In terms of branding and, you know, making that kind of success on your own, it's always smart to have a good social media presence and to be able to interact and communicate with your fans and your drinkers. I look at a brewery like Boulevard, which has a brewing ambassador named Jeremy Danner, who gets a ton of social media recognition. And it's just because he's active and willing to engage people on social media.
Right. And we've got Darren and Kevin here. It seems, Darren and Kevin, you have sort of in your brew, because it's fairly unusual to have the wild fermentation, and the farmhouse is a lesser known type of craft beer. That's your marketing.
Absolutely. That's absolutely critical to what we're trying to do specifically right now as well with the crowdfunding campaign going. We can't afford to be quiet on the social media fronts. You know, we've got to try and get that social media reach out as far and as quickly as possible. You know, and Sean kind of alluded to it a bit when he said, you know, that reach becomes so critical, and being just active on it. And, you know, we see Jeremy Danner's name from Boulevard popping up all over the place. So, you know, just engaging your audience is critical for us right now.
When we talk about unusual beers, it seems like we get more and more unusual beers as time goes by. Pumpkin beer at this time is huge. I want to ask you, what are some of the more unusual beers you've run across or plan on making? Sean, in this final couple minutes here, Sean Lewis, tell us about some unusual brews.
I think some of the more unusual brews I've come across in my writing. There's a brewery out in Michigan, I believe, called Ripe Brain Brewing Company, and they brewed a Mangalista Pig Porter. I didn't get an opportunity to try it, but it was a porter brewed with an entire Mangalista pig. I don't know necessarily how they did it. I don't know if I want to know how they did it, but it's pretty – so, I mean, there's a lot of brewers out there doing some really, we'll call them interesting things. By all accounts, that beer was really good, but like I said, I didn't get a chance to try it.
It could have been just the marketing, though, Sean.
Yeah, people got excited to you know, everybody likes bacon, so.
Jay Jubek, what about the unusual beers from your corner?
Oh, yeah. Well, I have heard of bacon beers. I haven't tried one, but, I mean, we're sticking to more standard styles. You know, we do have a pumpkin beer coming out. I'll probably do a coffee stout this winter, maybe a spiced beer, but we're trying not to go too over the top here just yet. So,
okay, your comment, Darren or Kevin, on unusual beers.
At my previous brewing job at Court Avenue, I actually made a bacon smoked porter that was aged in a Tabasco barrel.
How do you do that? How do you get the bacon flavor into a beer?
I actually put a bunch of bacon in the beer and just let it sit for a while.
And that came out, really did.
It did. Mostly with bacon, you're going to get kind of that smoked flavor. So having a smoked porter really helped kind of enhance that flavoring. And then putting it into a Tabasco barrel, you know, kind of took it to another level. And it turned out fantastic, in my opinion. It had mixed reviews for people. If you don't like Tabasco, it probably wasn't that great for you. But yeah, it was a very interesting one. And another one that I've recently done is a tomato basil beer. And this is one that I did ferment with our yeast slurry. And I got tomatoes from Jenny at Butcher Creek Farms here locally, and then put some basil in that I had been growing on the deck, and it actually turned out really well.
Mm. All right. There's our beer music. We've got to go, guys. Darren Vandenberg and Kevin Hall, founders of Black Hollow Brewing Company, trying to get some founding money going on right now. Thank you for joining us, coming us into our Des Moines studio. Also, Jay Jubek, owner, president of Jubek New World Brewing Company in Dubuque, and Sean Lewis, author of We Make Beer. He's a beer columnist. This is his first book, We Make Beer, Inside the Spirit and Artistry of America's Craft Brewers. Sean, thanks for all the stories. Jay Darren, and Kevin, good luck with your startups there.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Ben.
Thanks so much.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Claire Roth, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.